Venezuela after current president and socialist dictator Nicolas Maduro claims victory in a hotly contested election. Anti-Maduro protesters took to the streets after the election board, which critics believe is in the pocket of the socialist regime, declared Maduro won with 51% of the vote. However, the opposition, led by its candidate Edmundo González, says that they won by a landslide with more than twice as many votes as Maduro.
And that was Chris Salcido of Newsmax. And that's just a little headline, little tease. A lot of things have been happening in Venezuela. But here's the thing. What's happening here in the United States is mirroring what happened in Venezuela. And that's why I want to talk to you about it today. By the way, I had a scheduled a guest on Venezuela just last week. And he had to bail out because he said he has family members being arrested in their homes. They're coming into their homes, pulling them out. And he said, my family members have asked me not to speak. And so, but today we have someone who is also Venezuelan. He has no family left there. And so he can speak. This is really an amazing show. And I hope you'll take out a pencil and paper as you listen. But first, let me remind you that abortion has remained the world's leading cause of death for the fifth consecutive year in 2023, despite the overturn of Roe v. Wade. Tragically, this total is greater than the number of deaths attributed to the next seven causes of death combined. And sadly, with the abortion pill accounting for over 60% of all abortions, babies' lives are at an even greater risk now. And that's why the need for preborn. Preborn reaches the moms to show them their babies inside the womb via these ultrasounds. They reach them not only to save the life of the baby, but also save the heart and meant sometimes the life of the mother herself. If you would like to help, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. You know you can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, Truth Social. You can find us on YouTube also. Sometimes we do things on camera. You can go to AFR.net and listen to the podcast. That is Home Base American Family Radio. You can go to sandyrios.com and find it, or you can go to any podcast platform. All right. This is lesson time where you will want to take notes, or you might want to listen to it more than once, because our guest, Daniel DiMartino, has so much great information that's pertinent to us right now in the United States. So sit back and listen to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
Venezuela is in a deep economic and political crisis.
Its currency has been devalued 92%.
The amount of hyperinflation here is actually just unbelievable. You need a backpack full of money to buy a dinner.
Bread, medicine, toilet paper. These are just some of the basic necessities Venezuelans are struggling to find.
Lines down the block for just basic necessities. Line down the blocks for public transportation that is insufficient.
Dumpster diving has grown to be a common practice.
What you find in the trash is what you eat.
5 days without water. We were middle-class people, and now we're not even that anymore. We've lost our quality of life. This is how we live now as Venezuelans.
All right, Sandy Rios with you on Sandy Rios 24/7. Well, I've just talked to you, kind of set the stage, because the election of July 28th in Venezuela was explosive, and the repercussions are still being felt. But, of course, that doesn't really tell you the full story. I've had a fascination with Venezuela for a very long time. Interviewed one of the presidential candidates there a long time ago, and just got involved and interested and noticed that so much of what's happening in Venezuela is unfolding here in the United States. So they're in the news now, but because we have so much news, I don't think they've gotten the attention they deserve. And certainly the lessons we need to learn from them will not be, you won't find that in the regular press, but we're going to talk about that today. And I've asked to join us a young man named Daniel DiMartino. Daniel is the founder of the Dissident Project. He's also a graduate fellow at the Manhattan Institute. But Daniel got his BA in quantitative economics from Indiana University, and he's a PhD candidate in economics at Columbia University right now, and a lot of other things. But basically, he's the child of, he's Venezuelan, and is, Daniel, did you grow up in Venezuela?
Yeah, I did. I came to America in 2016.
Oh, so you really did. So you, were you, okay, the timeline escapes me here. The first Marxist, I'll say, to take over Venezuela, as far as I know, was Hugo Chavez. Were you alive then? Do you remember that, or is that before your time?
Well, he was sworn into office a month after I was born. And so I lived my whole life under Hugo Chavez's regime.
Okay. Well, that description that I just played about the shortages, does that describe what it was like for you growing up there?
Yeah. I mean, I would argue it's an understatement of how tough we had it. Not only did I have to line up for hours to buy food or medicine, sometimes I got denied the opportunity to buy things because I was a minor. There were times where the government actually told us which day of the week we could go to the grocery store. We also had very frequent blackouts. Sometimes we went weeks without water in my apartment, so we had to bring it up in containers, five flights of five floors. So it was extremely tough. We went from being like a normal middle-class family, like many here in the U.S., with a house, with cars, you know, with electricity, jobs, to, you know, not being able to afford food and basic things.
Can you tell me how you guys got here to the U.S.? Or can you
yeah,
are you able to tell that story?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I came by myself in 2016 because I got a full ride scholarship to study college here in Indiana. I knew that I was a good student. I knew that that was my way of living. My parents left too, but they left to go to Spain. My grandparents on my mom's side were originally from Spain. They had immigrated to Venezuela when it was the fourth richest country in the world in the 50s. And on my dad's side, they were from Italy. And so Venezuela welcomed people from all over the world, not just Italy and Spain, but from Lebanon, from Syria, from Colombia, from Chile, from everywhere you can imagine, because it used to be a prosperous country. And now, instead of, I say, we went from exporting oil to exporting people.
Yeah, boy, that's for sure. And we're going to get into as much as we can about this. I have several, like, clips I want to play and get your response on, Daniel, but this one just illustrates, I want to paint a picture for the kind of country that Venezuela was before this all started with Hugo Chavez. And of course, now we're into Maduro, the bus driver, who carried on his legacy. And there's so much to say about it, but this was the Venezuela that Daniel's parents grew up in, and this is clip one.
In the 80s, we start building the subway, the underground. And it was one of the best. Tourism was booming, also we travel outside, but tourism in our country was very, very good. We had a great gastronomy. I mean, like, eating in Venezuela was a great experience. Eating, you know, anything from any part of the world. You can find anything in the market, from cars, American or European cars. Yeah, middle class was growing. That gap between rich and poor was being reduced in time. But it's like cycles. When you have too much freedom, and too much democracy, the new generations start thinking about controlling. Some people said, we need a military guy to control the people that are ruling us. And how good could be some socialism, you know, instead of democracy? Maybe they feel like socialism will give them a home, a place to work, but they don't see the other side of the coin. In socialism, they want you to be equally poor and miserable.
Yes, so that gives you an overview. Venezuela was the richest country in Latin America and probably has high ranking in the world with its oil reserves. and all of its natural resources. It was a beautiful, wonderful country. That's not an exaggeration what our the voice just said. I cannot identify him because he's actually has family. He was going to join me a few days ago, but he has family back there, and they're under tremendous threat right now. Which brings me back to you, Daniel. Daniel, is there any danger for family members of yours back in Venezuela right now?
Yeah, you know, I would argue, I have very few family left, thankfully. Nobody that is direct. My grandparents, parents, you know, almost every uncle and aunt, almost everybody has left. But the issue is that now the Maduro regime has decided to crack down even on people who have anything on their social media or messaging apps like text or WhatsApp saying something about them negatively. And so they are actually having police checkpoints in the streets. They're stopping you. And if you get stopped, they ask you for your phone, and then they go through it. And you get arrested based on what you said on your own private messages. Imagine that. That is like dystopian 1984, you know, like George Orwell kind of dictatorship.
It is, Daniel. And when we lay the groundwork for what's happening there, I want you to help us walk through the parallels with what's happening here. And because I think that's really, to me, the most important thing we can accomplish today is that warning. But So Chavez takes over, and he does, I'm sure you know all of this, even though you were very young. He proceeded actually to really shred the Constitution. Did he actually tear it up? Or what? Tell us what happened when he took power.
Yeah, what happened is after he was sworn in, his first goal was to rewrite the Constitution, because constitutions obviously are limits on potential dictators. So he wanted to do that, and he couldn't just rewrite it, right? Just like you can rewrite the U.S. Constitution now, even if most people wanted it to, because there's a very arduous and there's a very high bar through the amendment process. You need so many people in so many states, right? It's very tough. And so what he proceeded to do was pack the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court allowed him to just hold a referendum where if he had 51% of the vote, he could totally rewrite it under a new assembly that he chose. And he did win that election, so he got that 51% of the vote. He rewrote the Constitution, and then there was a new general election, which he won, and the presidential term got extended from 5 to 6 years. He had a lot more executive authority. He eliminated the Senate, so another check and balance through the Congress. And he allowed for re-election, which was not allowed before 1999. You could only serve a 5-year term, and then you had to wait it out before running again. Now you could run for 2 6-year terms. He, by the way, after that, he ran for a third. He also legally modified the Constitution again so that he could run unlimited amount of times.
Daniel, my understanding is, and this is from someone who should know, I don't know if this is general knowledge, that Chavez actually murdered some of the Supreme Court justices. Is that your understanding?
That I cannot assure you. I haven't seen, like, totally credible evidence, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case, let's just say.
But
they have killed a lot of people.
So he dismissed... Yeah. He dismissed the Congress, whatever the term was for it in Venezuela. He dismissed this. And then he also did away with the Supreme Court in a very violent manner. He got rid of them, that's for sure, and punished them. He always punishes his enemies. And so then he's elected. And then so talk to us about, did the shortages come under Chavez, or did they become more acute under Maduro, the bus driver?
Well, both. The shortages were caused by price controls that Chavez created. So Chavez got into office, he did all these politically authoritarian things, but the economy was still running along the first couple of years, especially because the oil price went from $9 a barrel in 1999 to over $100 a barrel by 2007.
Wow.
Right? So in a span of 8 years, suddenly government revenues multiplied times more than 10. Right? So that obviously helped Chavez do all these spending projects, free housing, free food, free water, free electricity, free gasoline. And even all that money was not enough. Even the country with the largest oil reserves in the planet could not afford socialism. And so he began printing money. He created all these new government agencies. He started nationalizing private companies, landowners like farms. He started taking over banks. He started taking over all the cement industry, construction. He took over manufacturing firms. He took over the oil industry completely, which hadn't been fully taken over. And all those things that the government took were things that were destroyed. So, for example, they took a milk processing facility that was called Andes. That was a very famous company in Venezuela. He took even a coffee factory, like ground beans, and he turned it into a state-owned firm, which what they did with it was keep producing, but production fell because the government doesn't have the profit incentive, right? So they hired too many workers. They didn't charge prices high enough, and it stopped. The few products that they did make, they stamped a big red heart on the product that said, made in socialism. Whoa. They put big signs all over the highways. In front of the fields, they expropriated, saying, made in socialism. And then the fields are empty. It's an excellent example of what happens when you implement government takeover and socialism. It's emptied. It's destroyed. Everything they touch was destroyed.
So what happened then? Okay, so Maduro takes over, and that was I don't remember the details of that.
That was 2013.
2013, but it was not a fair and free election. And one thing I want to say, and you don't have to weigh in on this, because it's very, very controversial, but I will say, because this is something that I've learned through these years of following, that one of the ways that that Venezuela corrupted their voting system was through Dominion voting systems, through electronic voting systems that were manipulated. That's the accusation. And people say that was like the template for future uses in other countries.
Well, I can tell you how they did cheat in the Venezuelan elections. And I don't think it was actually by cheating on the machine. What they did is have dead people voting in Venezuela, so they voted for them. They forced people to vote for them. They had a military person next to them, forcing them in many places. They paid them to vote, and they had to take a picture while they voted, and then they showed it in order to receive welfare benefits. So that's how they started winning elections. That's how they maintained power, even though the economy was getting worse and worse, and people didn't support them. And now how they cheat is that not even all of that is enough to win. And so they just make up the numbers now. They just announce a different result. They don't even bother.
Well, so that's what just happened, actually. We should bring it up to, at least for the moment. July 28th was the election. And so you've got Edmundo Gonzalez running against Maduro. And I don't quite understand, Daniel, you can explain this. As I understand it, Maria Corina Machado is the opposition leader, and for some reason she did not run. Can you explain why Edmundo Gonzalez ended up being the candidate and kind of the dynamic there?
Yeah, it was really just a coincidence. Nobody knew who Edmundo was. I didn't know who he was until he was the candidate. Maria Corina is the leader. She was, in fact, my member of Congress. I know her personally, very woman, very, you know, free market person, very strong. But she was forbidden from running. The government didn't allow her to run.
Okay, so there's that. All right, but so she didn't run, but in her place was Edmundo Gonzalez, and I guess she was kind of by his side, as in some form or fashion. People understood that he was her surrogate. Is that an overstatement?
That's right. Nobody voted for him because they liked him. Everybody voted for Maria Corina Machado.
All right, so tell us what happened.
Imagine, I mean, this is so strong opposition to the regime that the name ID of Edmundo was effectively 0%. I'm a very high information person in politics in Venezuela, and I didn't even know who he was. So we're talking about a name ID that of 0, and he still won with over 70% of the vote, despite the cheating.
Now, okay, so that's what I wanted to get to. So there, the vote takes place. Maduro says he got reelected with 51% of the vote. But Machado says, in this article I'm reading, it says that the opposition, meaning Edmundo Gonzalez, backed by Maria Corina Machado, got 67% of the vote, and Maduro only got 30%. So how do we know? How do you guys know? I'm assuming you're aligned with Maria. How do you know you got that many votes?
Because the machines and the voting centers print the results after the voting center closes. And we had election witnesses in every voting center, or in most, the overwhelming majority of voting centers. And so not only that, but every voting center chair and witnesses would read the results of their voting centers out loud. And we had those things in video. And so we counted all the results from each voting center, and that's how we got to the two-thirds of the vote results.
All right. You wonder.
Maduro didn't produce any evidence.
You know, you wonder. I just wonder, Daniel, why he even bothered to have an election. He has total control. You know, you see, you just wonder why in the world he'd bother. But he did bother. And now we have this result. And my understanding is that, and we didn't go into the Cuban influence, but we should, that Cubans are going door to door pulling people out of their houses who supported the opposition or worked in the election and torturing. I don't know. Maybe you tell me. You tell me what's actually happening. I heard torturing and killing. Is that true?
Yes, it is. But it's not Cubans who are the ones who went door to door. It's Venezuelan military and Venezuelan intelligence. The Cubans are involved, but that's not the capacity in which they're involved. So what happens is, you asked first, why do they hold elections? That's a great question. Most dictatorships in the world today hold very frequent elections. That's some misconception that people have, that dictatorships don't have elections. They love to hold elections because that's how they identify opposition, that's how they're able to persecute people, and that's also a show of power. Like Maduro is able to demoralize the population by telling them, even if you win, I win. No matter what you do, I win. And now I know who you are. So the day after the election, they began, as you mentioned, going home to home to find the election witnesses, everybody who was a precinct chair, everybody. And they pulled them and they kidnapped them, and now there's over 2,000 arrested, there's over 20 dead. Maduro announced the creation of two prisons for political prisoners that he says are going to serve as re-education camps for them. You know what that means, right? That's not a nice thing.
We do know what that means. That's Russians were good at that too, and so were the Nazis, but the Russians especially. But here's the thing, you know, Daniel, that I years ago when I was covering when Chavez took over, I remember, and let me just say to my audience, I'm sure you know all of this, but it's important historical information. That prior to Chavez and that era, there were so many revolutions in Central and South America, and it was always a bloody coup to overturn the government. And there were always these factions. And then when the Soviet Union disbanded and communism, for the most part, faded away there, they were the big dog. They were the big communist country that controlled so much in the world, especially in Central and South America, then Cuba. Fidel Castro held a meeting with other leaders. I think it was called the Sao Paulo Forum. And in that forum,
that's right,
as I understand it, Daniel, they decided to use a new scheme. And that was to operate through the democratic process. Use the Constitution, use the elections to take power. And I should let you embellish that, since you know better than I.
No, you said it perfectly. It's the Sao Paulo Forum, which Chavez was a part of from the start. Petro, the president of Colombia today, is a part of it, and he's trying to turn Colombia into Venezuela. The question is whether he will be able to, because Colombia has now the experience of Venezuela next door, and the right wing in Colombia is very conscious of what's happening, and so they don't want to let that happen in their country. In Brazil, the president of Brazil is the same. The president of Mexico is the same. I mean, we're talking about thugs, criminals who are leading a bunch of Latin American countries down the path of Venezuela. So they took over Venezuela. By the way, I don't know if you know this, Cuba had tried to invade Venezuela in the 60s, militarily. They failed, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, they failed. They sent some paramilitary groups through the coast, through the Caribbean Sea, when they failed, they were expelled from the Organization of American States. A lot of people thought that it was because the U.S. requested their expulsion because of Castro and communism, but it was actually Venezuela that requested the expulsion of Cuba from the Organization of American States for its attempted invasion. So for Cuba, Venezuela has always been a goal because of the oil. Right?
Yes.
All these leftists around the world saying the U.S. wants Venezuela because of its oil. No, it doesn't. Cuba did from the beginning because Cuba needed subsidies from abroad because communism cannot be sustained on its own. And so they did get money from the Soviet Union. When the Soviet Union fell, there was mass starvation in Cuba until Chavez got elected in 1998 and then took over in 1999. From that moment, the special period in Cuba ended. When free oil started flowing for Cuba, what Venezuela does is that they send oil ships to Cuba, they don't charge them anything, and then Cuba resells it for full price.
Oh, wow. Well, and my understanding, too, from, again, these many years of talking to people, is that the Cubans actually brought military into Venezuela to help Chavez enforce or dismantle, do part of the destruction. So
that's right.
So anyway, well, all right, so
they brought in intelligence officers that control the Venezuelan military to make sure that if there's any dissent, they're identified and eliminated.
Well, this is the perspective of our mystery Venezuelan. I want to play this clip. Adam, this is clip 3.
That we were like the frog. We were cooked slowly. If you put a frog in cold water and you heat it up slowly, and it will stay there and die. We were in that process during the 20 years or 18 years of Chavez. Actually, when he took power, he said this, I'm swearing under this dying constitution. It's not the constitution I'm going to use. And then he called for a new assembly that will work on the constitution and change it so he can be elected as many times as he wants. And that's something in democracies that has to be, is alternation of the people that is ruling the country, okay? From 2000 until he passed away, he went changing and controlling each power, the Congress, the Justice Department, the electoral power. He wanted to nationalize businesses, control the oil company, the aluminum, the construction. They demonized professionals like lawyers, doctors. He destroyed everything. He had so much money that he felt like he didn't need anybody else.
All right, so that's just kind of supports exactly what you're describing to us, Daniel. Now, we've picked up, I'm sure people have picked up as we've been talking, the similarities between what happened in Venezuela and what's happening in the United States right now. So let's talk about that, because I think you do. Don't you speak to young people about this often?
Yeah, so I have an organization I founded called the Dissident Project. We send immigrants who lived in authoritarian countries under dictatorships, to speak at high schools to tell our stories. So that people have a different perspective, especially the young generation in high school before they get to college, that actually we are pretty blessed in America and we need to, you know, maintain our freedoms. And especially with the case of Venezuela, it's exceptional in a bad way because Venezuela destroyed itself democratically. In Venezuela, there was no coup. In Venezuela, at least not successfully. There was no invasion. There was no revolution. There wasn't a last day, and it condemned all the future generations to this disaster. I never voted for these people, Sandy. I was born a month before the new president was sworn in. And now my whole family has to deal with that. 8 million people have left. You know how much that is in Venezuela? It's the largest peacetime refugee crisis in world history.
Wow.
The largest peacetime refugee crisis in world history. And that was all caused by a socialist economic system and a dictatorship.
All right, I have a lot of different random questions for you. When I was just kind of notating the similarities, you know, I think about, of course, the Constitution. You know, there are people that their stated goal is to destroy our Constitution, and some of them are serving in Congress. They want to destroy it. They want to, I think of the voting The purity of our voting system has been completely attacked, like it was in Venezuela. And then one thing we have not talked, and then SCOTUS, the attacks now on our Supreme Court are unbelievable. They're irrational, and any other day and time, they'd be laughable. But the goal
I'll give you one example here. Ilhan Omar, who is a member of Congress from Minnesota, says that everything that's happened to my country is because of the United States. These are people who support Maduro. We have a member of Congress from New York, Gregory Meeks. He's not talked about very much in the media. He went to give his condolences in the funeral of Hugo Chavez. The funeral of Hugo Chavez, the dictator who destroyed it. There are currently Americans in Venezuela right now talking with Maduro, taking selfies, who were arrested in the Palestine protests here in New York City, including the leader of an organization called the People's Forum. So a lot of Americans are being deceived under this idea of democratic socialism, thinking that they're going to improve this country, when in reality they're being lied to by evil people. Because the people who are lying to them about, like the people who are going to Venezuela, they don't have good intentions. Nobody who goes and meets with a killer, the dictator, has any good intention.
Well, that brings me to a photo that you tweeted out just a couple of days ago, which is Nicolas Maduro with Opal Tamati. I've actually heard her name spoken before. I always think of the other founder of Black Lives Matter. But they are standing there. He's got his arms around them. And they're posing with him with his big photo and flag behind. So that's Black Lives Matter. You want to say a word about that connection?
Yeah. I mean, Maduro is very smart because for him, he knows that if he can destroy America from the inside, he has no enemy left. And imagine what the world would look like if America stops being a free country.
Oh,
and so it's not just Maduro. China, Russia, Iran, all of them want America to fail. And so they're financing these groups like Black Lives Matter, like the People's Forum in New York City, like the Palestine protests, because they want America to fail, because they want to deceive Americans into doing the same mistake that Venezuelans did in 1998. And the problem is that there's no going back. Democratic socialism begins democratically but never ends democratically.
No, you know, that makes me, I'm so surprised, shocked, and impressed that Venezuelans got up the courage and the boldness and the wherewithal to take over and win this last election. I'm really surprised, Daniel, given all the suffering, that they found it deep down in themselves to still fight back. You know, I thought they'd been beaten back beyond the ability to fight back. Can you explain that?
Yeah, you know, it's tough. You have to remember, you know, a lot of people used to support the regime. There's a video I saw that really hurt my heart where this lady, middle-aged, says, I used to be Chavista. I used to support Chavez. And now all my children have left the country. I'm extremely poor. And I really repent. I repent. I formed part of an evil trash movement, she says, as she was crying tears. And that's sad. And you know what? I totally forgive her, Sandy. I totally forgive her. I'm willing to forgive anybody who repents. The only issue is whether it's too late to repent, right?
Right.
To change things.
Right. Well, sometimes things do build back, but it takes forever. Other thing that complicates this that we did not talk about, it was Chavez, was it not, who took away all the guns from regular Venezuelans?
That's right. Yeah, you know, we never had a Second Amendment, but we did have some legal gun ownership. That ended in 2012. And, you know, I think things would look very different when military thugs go to your house for your children, for your teenage children, because they're all very young people who they kidnap, if the parents had weapons. I think people would defend their families to death.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my husband and I talk about this. It's like we have to keep our guns because we see what they're trying to do. And I can't think of any other way we can actually protect ourselves if everything falls apart and we get a Hugo Chavez, which we may be close to getting, actually. So what would be your warning to the United States, Daniel, and to Americans listening?
You know, I would say we need to be grateful for what we have. America isn't perfect. No country is. But we have a lot of good things going. And we should not be supporting people who threaten first or Republican norms. the separation of powers, the, you know, all these basic things, or freedom of speech, or freedom of religion. And we need to understand that the material prosperity that we enjoy, which we are the richest country in the world, is because of free enterprise. And we cannot support people who are going to erode that either. And so that's my warning to everyone. It's tough, you know, I understand. I think a lot of politicians offer easy solutions. I'm going to give you all these things for free, or I'm the only solution to this, but they're not, you know, and those things, everything has a cost. Free things come at a high price.
Yes, they do. Daniel, it's been a pleasure. Daniel DiMartino, by the way, you can find him on Twitter at Daniel DiMartino. He's got a lot of great information about this, and we wish you all the best, Daniel, and I hope that we can talk
to you
again.
Sandy.
Okay, thank you so much. Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Some of you are, you know, you have more finances than others. We're not all the same. Some of you are struggling, but others of you still have good resources. And if you have those kinds of resources, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, and that would reach 200 babies and their moms. To donate, just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
By exercising the First Amendment and in using the power of film, and just in time before the election, we are bringing you 12 amazing documentaries, which together tell the most powerful and complete story ever told. Prepare yourselves for the most educational, entertaining, and emotional live stream event of the year, all for only $25. Don't miss this. Everyone enjoys movies, so invite your friends and neighbors over for a live stream watch party. Go to 1afilmfest.com for your live stream ticket. Help us and spread the word and educate America. That's 1afilmfest.com. 1afilmfest.com.
What does that mean? What it means is that our access and our ability and our guarantee to having a home comes before someone else's privilege to earn a profit. That's what that means.
That was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and we all know her as the faithless, not really an American, American from New York City who's wreaking havoc, part of the squad. Really a force to be reckoned with, but a veiled communist, no doubt, by the things that she supports. And she's not alone. We've got Bernie Sanders, we have AOC, we have Elizabeth Warren, all three stating positions that mirror what we talked about with Maduro and Chavez. Let's listen to this. Just let me give you an example. This is clip 5.
We need to make public colleges and universities tuition free.
The world is going to end in 12 years if we don't address climate change.
And that means get rid of the Electoral College.
All right, so Sanders wants to give away college fees because it's buying. That's what Chavez did, too. He started giving people gasoline, giving them everything. This is how he, you know, gains popularity and maintains power. So that's what they're doing. AOC wants to do it with housing. And Elizabeth Warren wants to get rid of that nasty old pesky Electoral College because it holds these elections in check. And it's like a way to oversee and to check and balance when a democracy and the straight democratic casting of ballots is polluted in some way. So she wants to do away with that. And then, of course, how about our leadership? Kamala Harris has been already very clearly wants to do away with our Supreme Court. Now, she doesn't say that. She wants to pack it, and meaning to add justices to counterbalance the conservatives on there and neutralize them so that she can have her way, or whoever is on her team can have their way. She also goes back in California as a prosecutor using lists of gun owners to send police door-to-door to seize firearms. That's what she did there, and no doubt that's what she'll be doing for all of us if she gets elected. And then, of course, when we talked about parallels, one of the other things about Maduro, now this is the guy that just claims he won again. This is the bus driver, the heir apparent of Hugo Chavez, who Daniel and I talked about. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro is claiming that Zionists are the masterminds behind the civil unrest in Venezuela. It is all the fault of the Jews. That's what he's saying. And as a matter of fact, U.S. Special Envoy to Monitor and Combat Anti-Semitism, Deborah Lipstadt, said just this week that that's absurd and anti-Semitic. The Venezuelan people have gone to the streets to peacefully call for their votes to be counted. We reject all forms of anti-Semitism and the use of those types of age-old tropes fans the flames of Jew hatred in Latin America and throughout the world. In addition to that, Maduro has been now shutting down communication. I'm sure they've done that before, but now it's even more so. A lot of the Venezuelans have been using the WhatsApp messaging app, and so he's shutting that down and cutting off communication between them. And he's also then now using tech surveillance to hang on to power. Look, from my understanding, from others I've talked to about Venezuela, it's over right now. I mean, unless another uprising happens or another challenge that can be more clever, prevail better, or, you know, Maduro has some, you know, ends up dying or something, this particular bout, from all accounts, is over, which makes us all very sad. But when they take away your ability to defend yourselves and they pollute the voting process, and they weaken you through lack of food, lack of medical care, crime, all of that, you know, people are left desperate. And that's what's happened in Venezuela. And I'll close with this last thing. This is a warning from my other friend who couldn't join us for fear of hurting his own family. And this is clip 7.
Don't let them divide you. Don't let them divide you. Think that dividing society between, let's say, bad guys, good guys, or, I don't know, black and white, or rich and poor, or taking over the minorities for this to justify their socialism, it won't help. Everybody has a task in a society. The secret is to get the balance and create a very strong middle class and not divide the country. Division is what destroys Venezuela. And don't ever, ever say, this ain't gonna happen in my country. Because we went through that. We did say that. Many people in Venezuela said, oh, come on, like Cuba, we won't become nothing like Cuba. But look, 20 years after, we're worse than Cuba. They're not eating from the garbage in Cuba. And we are.
So in closing, I would just say we need to pray for the people of Venezuela. I did not say earlier, because I wasn't sure exactly where Daniel was on this issue, there was a very strong church in Venezuela when Chavez took over. Very strong. Lots of evangelical Christians. And that was part of that opposition movement against Chavez. And he came down really hard on them. And I really don't know what the state of the church is there, meaning the universal body of Christ. I don't know what the state of the church followers of Christ are right now in Venezuela, but we need to pray for them no matter what. Well, I want to thank you for listening to today's edition. I want to thank, by the way, our sponsors. We couldn't do this without Timothy Plan. You can put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Just visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.